How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Tons of stuff to talk about today, as there is every week in both pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We'll open up with last night's Strikeforce in Houston show. A big show, big night of MMA fights, including the first ever loss to former WWE champion Bobby Lashley. And not a good loss. We'll talk about what happened, his future in the sport, and a health update. He was stretchered out of the building and taken to the hospital where he was held overnight. Crystal Lashley was very upset, posting on Twitter all evening. We'll give you an update on him and what the doctors found and what this might mean for his future. Also, all the fights on that show. We'll talk about SummerSlam from last weekend. A big show followed by a big Raw on Monday night. They didn't do wonders for the Nexus group. We'll talk about that. Plus, one of the members of Nexus, one of the members that actually they were going to give a big push to, suffered an injury at the Honolulu show over the weekend and may be out of action for a long time. We'll tell you about that as well. Plus, review all of the big shows from this weekend, including NXT on Tuesday night, the Impact show on Thursday, SmackDown on Friday with the debut of Alberto Del Rio, who beat Rey Mysterio with an armbar in his big debut. We'll talk about some of the plans they may have for him, and of course who his ring entrance is influenced by, if you didn't figure it out when you watched the show. Several deaths to talk about as well. Skandor Akbar passed away, one of the big influences to a lot of guys, including Stone Cold Steve Austin. We'll tell you about his career, plus the career of Nightmare Ted Allen, who also passed away this week. Also giving an update on Mr. Wrestling 2, who's going in for open heart surgery very soon after passing out, I believe, last weekend at the Legends Convention. We'll tell you about that, actually 2 weekends ago. James Toney and Randy Couture are fighting this weekend for UFC. It's a big weekend in Boston. It is Dana White's old stomping ground, so I'm sure there's going to be a ton of media leading to that show. Plus, another UFC fan expo is going to be taking place. So we'll tell you about the show, do some previews, and talk about the expo as well. The Impact ratings down this week, and people in TNA very upset. We'll talk about why they are probably down and talk about the quality of the show in general and whether there's anything they could do to turn it around. WWE versus Chris Nowinski was quite the story this week, with Nowinski talking about the death of Lance Cade and WWE attempting to bury him and coming off very poorly. And a lot more, all coming up in the next 2 hours. We'll take your phone calls and emails as well. Lots going on. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Last night, Houston, Texas, the Strikeforce show, Bobby Lashley suffered his first defeat at the hands of Chad Griggs. It was not the best performance by Bobby Lashley, to say the least. And, Mike, what were your thoughts on that particular fight?
My thoughts kind of were, as it was going on, I know this is going to be obscure for some people, but Shinsuke Nakamura, who right now is a big star in New Japan Pro Wrestling, when he debuted, it was kind of at a time where Antonio Inoki was kind of running the show again for New Japan. And they had a lot of their guys, you know, Katsuyori Shibata and some other guys, go into shoot matches. And on a K-1 card, Nakamura, who was a very good Greco-Roman wrestler, went in against Alexei Ignashov from K-1. And he just basically, over and over again, kept telegraphing his takedown. He just went in, took Ignashov down, got on top of him, couldn't do too much. The round ended. In the third round, he was met with a knee strike right to the eye. It dropped him, and that was it. Fractured his orbital bone, hurt his wrestling career. That was pretty much it for a while for Shinsuke Nakamura. It parallels a lot to what happened with Bobby Lashley, who kept diving in there over and over again, and you kept waiting for it. And for a guy that is trained with Don Fry, you know, you figured after a while, Chad Griggs would be able to figure this out if he didn't get mauled on the ground, and he never did, so when Lashley dove in there with that shot and he ate that big hand that opened up his eye and took a lot, it just completely took a lot of the starch out of him, it's caused some big problems now for Strikeforce, who's been building him up and trying to do it very, very slowly to make him a real contender in MMA, and also hurt his wrestling career a little bit if he decided to want to come back to do that, even though, realistically, that's not going to be in the plans for quite some time.
Yeah, Lashley did what Lashley does. A lot of takedowns over and over again. Set up almost none of them. Just rushed in, grabbed the guy, took him down. And it was fine early on for him, but then after a while, he started getting tired, and that's what happens when you do a lot of picking up and slamming of dudes. And Chad Griggs just held on and weathered the storm and busted Lashley open. And then as the second round wore on, Lashley got more and more tired. He took a knee to the solar plexus, which might have hurt him as well. And at that point, the problem was that he had nothing left behind all of these punches. So the problem was, in fact, one of the most astounding things I have seen in a long time is that he was so tired that at one point he was mounted on Chad Griggs and kind of sort of throwing punches, but not really, and the ref stood them up. Now, he stood them up to check a cut on Lashley's eye, because Lashley was all busted open and bleeding all over the place. But after the doctor allowed them to continue, the ref just had them restart standing. And I don't know if maybe he thought he was calling a stand-up as well on the mount position, since Lashley wasn't doing anything, although I don't think I've ever seen anybody stood up from the mount. But Lashley was stood up here, and after they checked the eye, he was put back right into the fight in a standing position. And as it turned out, he pretty much got TKO'd at the end of the second round, and the ref stopped the fight. And Lashley ended up hospitalized afterwards. He walked out of the cage under his own power, but they had to stretch him out of the building. He was taken to the hospital in an ambulance. He was held overnight. He was dehydrated. He was released this morning, but apparently they did some blood work, and the blood work did not turn out well. And I don't know what the situation is other than that, but Lashley, of course, in the past did have a problem in WWE with elevated liver enzymes. If you recall, he was held off the Punjabi prison pay-per-view, whatever that was, years back, after they found that his liver enzymes were elevated. So, could have been a problem with that again, I don't know, but I guess his future is in question. They were talking at the press conference about how Scott Coker said, we'll have to talk to him about whether he wants to continue after this. We'll have to see where his head's at, and it's been a rough
week. And they're saying this after his first loss.
Well, yeah.
So it's kind of a dramatic thing to say after your first loss. And I think the thing, too, with the Punjabi thing was the Great Khali, at that same time, there were a bunch of guys that ended up having, well, elevated liver enzymes at that time.
Yeah, the problem with Lashley, I think the reason it was brought up was, if you've gone to any of the internet message boards, Lashley is, boy, is he taking a beating from the MMA fans after his performance last night. In fact, I think on, it might have been MMA, I forget what show it was, but they were outright saying he needed to go back and fight those fake ballerinas again and that sort of thing. And it's a bunch of people saying that, well, he's been in a real fight now, he proved that he doesn't have heart, that he couldn't take it, and he needs to go back to pro wrestling. He was never that tough to begin with. And I think that's probably being a little harsh to Bobby Lashley, but I think that if he had not been a pro wrestler prior to getting into MMA and a former WWE champion, I don't think people would be asking if he was thinking about retiring after his first loss.
I would figure that's the case, too. Although, yeah, and by the way, too, after he was stood up, even though they had to go back and he didn't start back on top again, he did get a lot of time to recover there, and he was breathing really heavily, so it did kind of balance out what the referee did. Now, the referees all night were a scary, scary situation, and it's another embarrassment towards Texas and the way they, well, they have no athletic condition, the fact they're just a big mess.
Yeah, the second fight had some of the most horrendous refereeing you'll ever see. I actually, if somebody is going to have to email me the name of the referee, I didn't write it down, I should have. He ended up being one of those referees we really never need to see referee a fight again. It was KJ Nunes
Kerry
versus
Hatley, by the way. Kerry Hatley.
Kerry Hatley. So anyway, Kerry Hatley, everybody, never hire him for your event if you're an MMA promoter. This guy. So we had a KJ Nunes-George Gurgel fight, and first off, George Gurgel is a black belt. Everybody knows the story. I don't even know why I repeat it every time. George Gurgel is a black belt who never goes to the ground. His weakness is his stand-up, and so he goes in there, and he stands up in every single fight. Now, if you're in there with a guy whose stand-up isn't very good, and you think yours is better, then that's one thing. For example, in the fight that followed with Jacare Souza and Tim Kennedy, Souza is much, much better on the ground. But he chose to stand as well. At least in that situation, he was winning the stand-up for a lot of the fight. KJ Nunes and George Gurgel. Nunes, I think his stand-up is a little overrated, but he is a pro boxer. And he's much, much better than Gurgel. And Gurgel did all right in the first round, but he was still getting beat up. And he goes in there, and he's getting hit a lot, and this sort of thing. And there ends up being a shot after the bell that knocks him on his ass and makes him all wobbly. And I think that Nunes, like, it looked to me like he was throwing as the bell rang, and it was not an attempt to throw a sucker shot after the bell. I give Nunes the benefit of the doubt here. However, the shot did land after the bell, and Gurgel was knocked batty by it. So maybe the fight should have ended right there and been called a no contest, but this referee just thought, well, he got hurt. He can come out for round two. So Gurgel comes out for round two, and Nunes drops him with the exact same shot again. Gurgel goes down. He's clearly out of it. And, you know, it's such a perfect shot that Nunes doesn't even fall him to the ground. He just stands there like the fight is over. But the ref just stands there as well. So Nunes leaps in there to finish the fight, and he starts landing shots, and Gurgel is completely out of it, and Nunes is looking at the referee going, can you stop this? And the ref is, like, moving in like he's gonna, but then he kind of moves back. Then he moves in, but then he moves back. He's all tentative. And finally, he stops the fight, but as he's doing so, Nunes throws a soccer kick to the head. And the fight went to the judges, or went to the decision, and they announced, of course, that Nunes had won via TKO or knockout or whatever the case might be. But no one in Strikeforce questioned this illegal soccer kick. Nobody in Strikeforce questioned this illegal shot after the bell. I don't know. Well, regardless of what the referee did, how do you ever throw a soccer kick at a downed opponent? It just, that one to me is just astounding. But,
well, it was a knee strike. It was a knee right in the face.
It was something like that. I thought it was a soccer kick. They were calling it a knee strike. Regardless, it was either a knee or a soccer kick to the head of a downed opponent, which, well, you cannot do.
Yeah, it didn't matter. He was on all fours. It didn't matter, period.
Yeah. So that was an appalling case of refereeing, and I know that Nunes was asked about the sucker punch, supposedly, after the fight, and he said, you know, it was the heat of the moment, I didn't mean to do it, and Gurgel agreed and said, I don't think he's a dirty fighter and that sort of thing, but I didn't hear any press conference quotes regarding the knee-slash-soccer kick, whatever it might be, and that was the one that I found most appalling, and we're going to get Mike's thoughts on that when we come back from this break. Finish talking Strikeforce as well and get into more pro wrestling and MMA. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We're in the middle of a discussion on the Strikeforce show from Houston last night and the KJ Nunes George Gurgel controversy, and Mike, we'll get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, you could be said to be generous in saying that, you know, his arm was in motion. I mean, it was very close. That the punch at the end of the first round was very, very close, but what helps Nunes' case there, and anybody that saw its case there, was the fact that it's not like the corner of Gurgel went out there and complained or anything. In fact, they yelled at him for keeping his head straight up there. But the knee or the shin, whatever foot, whatever it was that hit him afterwards, was it was bad. Now, realistically, he never should have gotten to that point, because, like you said, and not only did Nunes, you know, hesitate before jumping in there, he looked dead at the referee before he went down and started delivering those punches. Now, why on earth he decided, you know, to turn pride all of a sudden and, you know, waylay him with that shot, I have no idea. But it's, you know, as bad as that was, it should be another big beaming light, much like a lot of the decisions in judging should be a big shiny light on how these referees are assigned and how they're trained and what they're supposed to be looking for.
Two other big fights on the show, Jacare Souza and Tim Kennedy for the vacant 185-pound title, which Jake Shields held before going to UFC. And how did you score that fight?
I actually had it 48-47 Kennedy. I gave Souza the first and second rounds. I gave him the Kennedy of the third and fourth, and then I actually wussed out but called it a draw in the fifth round.
Yeah, this is one of those fights where it's tough because they don't give out draws, and they should. But sometimes you just have an even round. And this was a fight that was so close. I scored the entire fight a draw. I gave the first two rounds to Jacare. I gave the second two rounds to Kennedy. And I called the fifth round a draw. And I could find a way to judge this for either man or neither man. I felt you could have given the second round a draw. I felt that you could have given the last round to really either guy. Depends on how you wanted to score it and what you consider to be... there are many factors that go into scoring a round, and Jacare had the better of the stand-up, but, Kennedy gave him a huge slam there at the end of the fight. So you could have – there are a million ways that you could have judged this fight. In fact, pretty much every round you could have almost given to either guy, with maybe an exception or two. But ended up going to Jacare. He is the new 185-pound champion. And where they go from here, I'm actually not sure. There's not a whole lot of talent in Strike Forces compared to UFC, but I'm sure they've got some ideas. But it was
according to them, they have one of the deepest middleweight divisions in the sport.
Well, that's wrong. But anyway, it was a fine battle right there. And finally, we had King Mo and Rafael Feijão for the 205-pound title. King Mo was the champion going in, and Feijão is obviously a more well-rounded fighter in most every facet, but also didn't look like he had the best cardio in the world. And he won the first round, I felt. It was close, but I thought he won the first round. Second round, I would give to Mo as Rafael started to get tired, and Mo started to take it to him in the second half of the round. But then early in the third, Rafael came out, rocked him with a shot, went to work, punches and knees. Mo looked completely out of it. All he could think to do was, I must shoot! And he shot in, he grabbed Rafael around the legs, he pulled him into the cage, and he just stood there. And he did not attempt a takedown, he did not move. I don't know if he was resting, I don't know if he was half out of it, but Rafael landed a bunch of hammer fists, and finally the referee stopped it as Mo was still in the exact same position holding on for dear life, and as Rafael stepped away, Mo just fell down. So, not a stellar performance by King Mo, but he was looking good there in that second round before he ended up getting rocked in the third. Mo is a huge wrestling fan, by the way, a gigantic wrestling fan, and I know there are a lot of arguments when people talk about Chael Sonnen doing pro wrestling promos and that sort of thing, and people like to say, those aren't pro wrestling promos, they're just sports promos and this and that. The obvious difference being that Chael Sonnen flat out got his material from professional wrestling, and King Mo flat out got his as well, and in fact, wants to be a pro wrestler, but felt that the easiest way to get into pro wrestling was to become a world-class fighter first while he was young. So anyway, that's the pro wrestling tie-in with those two guys, and Mike, your thoughts on that fight?
Well, and the big shame of all of this is too with the way, and we said it repeatedly, and the way Strikeforce doesn't do what they should do to hype up their next upcoming events. They have a long interview with Luke Rockhold for his fight coming up against Matt Lindland, which is about the same amount of time that they've had King Mo on camera in the last three events to build up this show. It's been very disappointing that way, but yeah, when Mo kind of latched on there at the end, it was. I've seen guys punch themselves out, but I've never seen a guy elbow himself out. And he took about, I don't know how many he took, but it was a very impressive performance by Feijão. And it's not like, you're a mega superstar on Strikeforce or anything, but if this thing got a good rating, it is good for Feijão because he was pretty exciting and, did put on a good performance. But obviously this isn't going to stop Mo, and he's still a very, very marketable guy. But another interesting thing that came up on the show, too, was their text message survey that they had over the one-night tournament that took place on the Strikeforce Challenger show that was set up to see who was going to face Sarah Kaufman. 86% of the people thought that was a good idea, and they hyped it up as a great star-making process, possibly for Strikeforce. So I guess we're going to be seeing a lot more of those.
I did like how they did a tournament, and then on the next show they asked if people thought the tournament was a good idea. I don't know. I mean, it's great to poll the people and listen to the people and that sort of thing, but it just, for some reason, it just came off like we're totally second-guessing what we just did. But at least the fans thought it was a good idea. And as far as, like, the Luke Rockhold promo, God bless the guy and everything, but...
Not his fault. He obviously is not a wrestling fan.
No, but it was just like... I was astounded because it was a really boring promo, and it was like... All of this time is devoted to Luke Rockhold, of all people.
With a generic announcer, and that's, you know, the problem with not having a Jim Gray type, whether it be man, woman, animal, vegetable, or mineral, it doesn't matter. Have somebody there that can try to spice that interview up when you have guys like that, because you can't expect everybody to be a King Mo. Sometimes you have to create your own guys, and by doing that, that would have been a good idea. Another thing that they should have done too. Now during the show, they ran the Showtime World Boxing Classics and some of their upcoming programming that they have going on. That's the other big difference between the UFC and Strikeforce, and something Strikeforce needs to do in hyping up their next show that they have coming up. Run a video package. Don't just have that interview with Rockhold, but have some sort of hype package set up for that San Jose show. For Christ's sakes, you have Nick Diaz. Tell the people again that Nick Diaz is going to be there, because he at least equals entertainment.
Yeah, I mean, I just was astounded that they spent all this time interviewing Luke Rockhold, which nobody remembered when the show was over, didn't excite a single person for his fight. But on the show last week with the tournament, was there like one live interview with King Mo? Was there one live interview with Bobby Lashley? Was there one live interview with anybody promoting that show? No. It was like they did a complete standalone show where if you watch it, you'd have no idea there was a Strikeforce show coming up in Houston, with the exception of maybe a graphic with the lineup that they threw up there one time. And meanwhile, here on this show, they opened the show recapping the tournament, and then they interviewed just literally, and people are going to be upset when I hear this, but a random guy who's going to be fighting on the Strikeforce show. This was like, where is Nick Diaz? Where was Nick Diaz to cut a crazy Diaz promo for the San Jose show? I realize he doesn't have an opponent yet, but still, he should have been there just talking crap about somebody.
Where was Sarah Kaufman to hype up the fact that, yeah, I finally made it to the big show, because she had complained about being stuck on the Challenger show? It's her chance to shine. Give her a chance to talk people in and give them a reason to make her the next women's star.
I want to talk a little bit about Skandar Akbar, who passed away.
Wait, before you do, I just want to say this too: Chad Griggs, Trevor Murdoch.
may have been actually. Skandar Akbar, former wrestler and manager, most known for his time in World Class, which is where Steve Austin met him, and a big mentor for Stone Cold Steve Austin in his early days in pro wrestling, and. Best known for his managing stuff, and actually in later years, best known as a guy who went to all of the big conventions and worked a lot on the indie scene. And actually, he was at the Legends convention just a couple of weeks ago, and he'd been suffering from, I believe he'd been suffering from cancer for a while, and unfortunately passed away this week. And Mike, any memories of Skandar Akbar?
Yeah, I mean, I was a big fan of his growing up, because where I grew up, I got a chance to see both World Class and Mid-South TV. I got a chance to see a lot of it, actually. And it was always amazing, because when you took the guys that Akbar had individually, I wouldn't like them if they were on their own. Missing Link, Kamala, a lot of the guys that were in Devastation Incorporated in World Class, Tim Brooks and guys like that. And even when he was in the UWF, for the most part, those guys on their own, Wild Bill Irwin, you wouldn't care about. But you did hate him when they were linked in with Skandar Akbar, because his interview was so good. And they were just great heels down there because of him and his unit that he put together. I mean, just the ability to... He also was cool in the fact that you hated Akbar and Devastation Incorporated so much that when you had tweener guys like Bruiser Brody and the Freebirds, who for the most part were hated by everybody else, those guys, when they fought Devastation Incorporated, would end up being cheered by the fans and end up being good guys, because people just wanted to see Akbar get beat up. And that's how, you know, good of a player he was in Texas and Louisiana and everywhere down there. He did a great job and the fact that he was so open in talking about the wrestling business and his experiences, you know, long after he had retired, or actually went into semi-retirement, because he was still doing independent shows, and he has a lot of time on the Heroes of World Class documentary as well, which was really good and very interesting too. And he was always very honest and open, and was always a guy that, you know, he saw a lot of bad stuff going on, especially in World Class, but it never embittered him at all. And he always spoke highly of the wrestling business and always had a lot to tell people. And
actually, Mike,
really
hold on.
Cool. I didn't even know he was still doing independent shows.
Yeah, hold on one sec. We're going to head to a break here, but we'll talk more about Akbar when we come back from the break, and Nightmare Ted Allen as well. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And for all the latest news in pro wrestling and MMA, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates. We got a lot of radio shows up there. In fact, we've got about three or four of them up for free right now. If you head up to WrestlingObserver.com and scroll down the right-hand side of the page, list of our latest three free radio shows. Check them out. Download them. We've got a lot of different things, including archived versions of this show, plus Wrestling Observer Radio with Dave Meltzer and myself, and the Brian and Vinny Show as well. And at some point, we'll put up some Figure Four dailies for people to sample as well. But download them. Check it out. And if you like what you hear, consider signing up. We do 15 to 20 radio shows per week, not just myself, but we've got a lot of great hosts up, including Mike here, one half of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare with Adam Summers, covering pretty much everything you can imagine in the world of wrestling and MMA, including the history of wrestling, a lot of stuff from Japan. I do shows every other week with Dr. Lucha Steve Sims covering Mexico. Pretty much anything in sports entertainment or MMA is covered on the website. We have a huge archive, which is available if you sign up. Every show we have ever done since 2005. There are thousands and thousands of shows, tens of thousands of hours of audio. So basically, if you signed up today, you would never be able to go through all of it. And we add more every single day. So check it out, WrestlingObserver.com. If you're a big fan of wrestling audio, that's the place to go. We've got more of it there than you could ever possibly listen to. So WrestlingObserver.com. And Mike, you were talking about Skandar Akbar. And let's talk a little bit more about him and then talk about another sad death this week, Nightmare Ted Allen.
Yeah, you know, another thing about Akbar, too, is a lot of people won't realize, well, I mean, maybe they do. He did have a wrestling career, but, you know, it started off pretty huge, and then only a couple years into his career, he had a run teaming with Danny Hodge and then turned on Danny Hodge, which, you know, if Akbar got any heat, it obviously comes from that time down there where, you know, in Texas, obviously going to the University of Oklahoma, going to Oklahoma State, Danny Hodge was a god in wrestling down there. So just had a very long and very fruitful career, and it's just very sad to hear. And it's been a bad run in the last couple of weeks with Lance Cade, and obviously the open heart surgery of Mr. Wrestling 2, Johnny Walker, coming tomorrow, and also a Nightmare Ted Allen cast. And it was a little bit before my time in that I never got to see too much Tennessee or Continental in Alabama and everything, where he did a lot of work. But I know he also made a lot of visits to Fan Fest. I'm not sure if he was at the last one in Charlotte. He was a couple years ago. I do know that. And I know that's about all I know about him. Brian, I'm not sure how much you know about Ted Allen.
Yeah, Ted Allen, besides his wrestling career, obviously the Nightmare gimmick, masked wrestler for Continental, but also known for... I guess actually probably what he was better known for, or at least more of an influence in his wrestling career, was the fact that he trained a lot of guys, including Arn Anderson and the Big Boss Man. He worked as a trainer for those guys, and in later years he also built wrestling rings. So a lot of the wrestling rings that you may have seen around that area may have been built by Nightmare Ted Allen. But he did a lot of those, did a lot of conventions, and also had a presence on Facebook and MySpace. He's one of those wrestlers that, one of the older guys that really jumped on some of the newer technology, and he was out there talking to people. And there's a lot of stuff we'll probably talk about more with Dave Meltzer here later on this afternoon on the show. But Nightmare Ted Allen played a lot of roles in wrestling and influenced a lot of people, not just in the ring, but outside of it as well. Wanted to talk about the upcoming UFC show in Boston. I think we should talk a little bit about that. It's coming up this weekend. It is a big weekend in the sense that it's the first chance for Dana White to promote a show in his old stomping grounds, and it's got a double main event of Frankie Edgar defending his 155-pound title against BJ Penn, and also Randy Couture will, I guess, defend the honor of MMA against boxing legend James Toney, who's been... I've been disappointed of late by James Toney. I was down there in Vegas. There was a brunch with James Toney, and he was talking a lot of crap about UFC, MMA, Randy Couture, and I thought, man, this guy is going to be money for this show. And maybe he will in the last week, but really haven't been blown away by him of late. They did a conference call where he did a lot of rambling, and I guess we'll wait until the... I presume they're doing some sort of countdown special, and maybe it's going to be awesome. But so far, I've been underwhelmed by his performance, which I expected to be much better.
Well, I think they are going to ratchet it up because this is when all the nationals, you know, mainstream sports media and other national media is going to come into the mix up there. And I think we'll turn it on then. I mean, really, if you're to do anything right now, I mean, everybody knows that's a UFC fan or follows MMA what the deal is going to be with this anyway and why it's happening. So I can see it ratcheting up a lot, and I can imagine hearing him talk to Brian Kinney on SportsCenter and whatever else they're going to do, because he is going to be on 10. And this is a show that, I mean, obviously, it's a surprise. Obviously, the number of Sonnen and Anderson for the pay-per-view buys was going to be a shock. But this one, again, is going to be huge as well, and it's going to be back-to-back. Everyone, you know, pretty much figured this one was going to be big. Now it's, I guess, a question of if it's going to be, you know, as big as Anderson and Sonnen is going to be. But Frankie Edgar and BJ Penn is, I thought Edgar won the first fight. I didn't think he dominated or anything like that, but I did think he won the first fight. And obviously that's the true main event of this show, and I think he's going to actually pull off the victory again in this match right after Randy Couture, well, whenever Randy Couture decides to stop playing around and choke out James Toney.
So you expect Randy to beat James Toney?
I would, yeah. And it's just a matter of, to be honest, because, you know, it would be... you know, I don't think doing the Expendables took that much out of Randy Couture. It made him so slow that he's going to be able to stand in there with James Toney, who it's not exactly like James Toney at any point in the last, oh, I don't know, decade of his career has been a offensive one-punch knockout kind of guy. I mean, he gets into grinding battles. He's an old-school boxer at this point, rolling shoulders, dirty fighting on the inside, all that sort of stuff. All of the things that Randy Couture is in no way in hell going to let him do. And you figure Couture is just going to, at some point, scoop in there, take him down. And it's a matter of if he plays with him or not. Does he spank him like Tito Ortiz? And I'm a boxing guy. I just cannot fathom this going any other way but that. And it's going to be over when Randy Couture says it's over. In a way, I'm kind of hoping, because of the way that a lot of boxing fans who just don't get it, are squawking about this fight. I hope Dana White actually has to walk up and step on the ring apron and puts his hand out like a Roman, you know, back in the old Roman days, and then he just goes thumbs down, and that's when actually, you know, Couture will end the contest.
As far as the rest of the show here, the top matches on the live event, we've got Damian Maia and Mario Miranda, who is going to be fighting third from the top on a UFC. He's a guy who's faced, actually he's only got one loss, but most of his wins have been over low-level talent, and this will be by far his biggest test, facing Damian Maia on Saturday. Kenny Florian faces Gray Maynard, and Nate Diaz faces Marcus Davis. On the prelims, which you're going to see free on Spike TV, it's Joe Lauzon against Gabe Rudiger, and Andre Winner against Nick Lentz. There are three other prelims on the show, and Mike, anything there that really catches your fancy?
I'm just really surprised, actually, that Florian, kind of coming back home, too, is not third from the top against Gray Maynard. Not like it really matters all that much, but you figure that's going to be, I'm figuring that's going to be it's not going to be a first-round knockout or anything like that. That's probably going to be a decision. And I'm figuring, you know, I'm not sure much about Miranda. I know Maya, but it just kind of surprised me that that fight, especially with the way that Florian can talk and the fact that he's got that outlet on ESPN and everything, kind of surprised they're not using him a little bit more to hype the show up as well, although I guess that may start happening this week too.
Let's jump into some of the email questions here as we wrap up this segment. We'll do more news and probably some phone calls in hour two. This person says, I was thinking about what you and Dave said about Eric Bischoff's comments about how ratings, pay-per-view, and house show attendance are all related. If I remember correctly, back in WCW, wasn't that sort of the case for him? When business was up in WCW, everything from the ratings to house shows to pay-per-views were up, and when they tanked, they all did. I know you also compared it to MMA. The reason you order the pay-per-views is because you know this is going to be a good fight and you want to watch. You don't have to watch the TV to know what fight you want to see. What wrestling, it's all about the storyline, and if despite it being a good match, it's whether wrestling can make you believe what they're trying to sell you is worth the $40. Well, I don't think you guys are completely wrong. I just think making that comparison, you were just a little too hard on Eric. Well, I very rarely feel I'm too hard on Eric Bischoff. Listen, yes, when business is hot, obviously a lot of other segments end up being hot as well. In other words, if the promotion is hot, then by the very definition of the promotion being hot, TV ratings, buy rates, and house show attendance are all up. But Eric is trying to say that one is directly related to the other, in the sense that if business is down, I guess his theory is that if business is down and you increase the ratings, everything else is just automatically going to go up. And that's not true.
They proved that with the fact that they have the same viewership every week, yet their pay-per-view buys aren't there. So their shows, there's not a direct correlation because they're incredibly faithful fans that won't pay a dime.
Yes, if you look at last year when they did the commercial-free Raw, it did a 4-5 rating. The very next weekend, the pay-per-view should have, in Eric Bischoff's theory, done a gigantic buy rate because they're all tied together. If the show does a 4-5, then by Eric Bischoff's theory, the pay-per-view should do a gigantic number if they're all tied together. Well, the show did a 4-5, and the pay-per-view did one of the lowest buy rates of all time for WWE. So right there, they're not tied together. Now, if there were evidence that when the Impact rating did a huge number on January 4th, that the following pay-per-view also did a huge number, then maybe Eric would be right, but that's not the case. The ratings for January 4th were very, very high, and the pay-per-view did what the pay-per-views always do. So the pay-per-view number was not boosted by the number being very, very high. We have seen times where ratings have been high and house show attendance has not changed at all. We've seen times where house show attendance was high and ratings didn't change at all. WCW, their turnaround began at the house shows, and it had nothing to do with the Monday Night Wars or Hall and Nash or anything like that. The house show number started going up when Ric Flair and Randy Savage were having a house show feud. That's when the numbers first started to go up. Those were not reflected on TV, and those were not reflected in pay-per-view. So the house show numbers were going up, while at the same time, nothing else was going up. So Eric is trying to claim they're all tied together, which is not the case. If a promotion takes off, if TNA, for example, for whatever reason, they hit a hot angle and everybody started talking about it, then, yeah, at some point if the promotion took off, all of the things should be high. But they would be high because the promotion is hot, not because one directly led to another. So that's the statement we're trying to make here. And, you know, Eric can say all he wants, but the fact is that there have been many, many times where TNA ratings have been high and pay-per-view buy rates have been low, or in WWE where the same thing has happened. One aspect of business has been doing very, very well, and other aspects of business have been... In fact, for right now, just one example before we head to a break here, WWE ratings earlier in the year had not been all that special, but business overseas at house shows was gigantic. So the gigantic house show business overseas didn't mean a thing for ratings. So anyway, we'll talk more about this and take more email questions after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Wanted to do one more email before we head to our hourly break. This person says, Brian, there was a story in the Observer about the FCW tryouts. Now females like Sexy Star won't even get looked at unless they're Playboy material. Since Johnny Ace is the person who makes these calls, he's the one who gets blamed for these hiring practices. But just how much of it is really his tastes, and how much of it is him really just acting as a proxy for Vince? Well, the buck does stop at Vince McMahon, but it's not like Vince McMahon is going to say that he doesn't want Playboy models. I mean, you know, Johnny Ace has a taste for swimsuit models. He just does. That's many of the women he hired have been swimsuit models, and many of them have worked in fitness contests or professional modeling or that sort of thing. And those are the girls that he goes after. And Vince McMahon is not going to say no to a decree that you must look like a Playboy model to be on television. In fact, Vince is probably going to go, great! So anyway, that's essentially the story there. And yes, Tiffany was a Playboy model before she got into WWE, as were several of these girls, actually, including Maryse. So yeah, that's the story there. Mike, any thoughts?
And there's another reason why I thought Tiffany would have more success. I mean, Trish, Sunny, Sable, Kelly, they do like blondes as their showpiece up there. But I mean, and again, this would not bother me if I just don't want to see them in the ring. And that would be fine if you use them for other reasons, you know. Well, don't break them on Ted DiBiase's arm, because that way they'll disappear and go into the ether, and it'll be a very sad state of affairs. But, you know, have these, you hire these Playboy women, that's fine. Just don't have them wrestle, please.
I would actually be okay if you had them get in the ring to train, and you found girls that have potential and you pushed them. I mean, Trish was a fitness model, but she became one of the best women's workers they ever had. Unfortunately,
this is true, but
there are no Trishes right now in WWE.
And they took time with her, and they're not seemingly taking it with anybody else. I don't know, the neckbreakers always make me cringe.
Yeah. We're going to head to the top of the hour break. We'll be back after the hour, about 7 minutes from now, to talk more pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for another full hour. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Wrestling Observer Live, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, joined, as always, by Mike Sempervivi of the Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare. And we spent the first hour talking about Strikeforce, some WWE. Got to talk about TNA, I guess, during this hour. Hate to be so sad when saying that, but has not been lighting my world on fire lately, although they have some great wrestling on the show last week. And Mike, did you get a chance to see the Impact show this week?
I turned it on late, so I only saw hour two, beginning with Ric Flair and Mick Foley doing the interrupt show, or Ric Flair actually doing the interrupt show to Mick Foley, which was really painful, and yeah, that kind of that started me off on my night of TNA. So unfortunately, I missed the two of the qualifying matches, or the first round matches to see who would be the new TNA champion, but 1 hour of TNA was enough for me.
I have not been a fan of TNA for a long time, as everybody's aware, but I will say that the Kurt Angle, Doug Williams qualifying match, it was only about 6 minutes long, but my God, was that one of the best matches in a long time. It was so great.
It was so short. It was so short for, I mean, and again, you don't want to have like you didn't need to have a 20-minute match on TV or anything like that, but couldn't this have had, like, 12 to 15 minutes, please?
It would have been nice. I don't know. I hope that these guys work with Kurt, and Kurt, you know, falls in love with him and wants to do a program. And the only problem with that is I know that Kurt really wanted to do a long program with Red after they had that first match together, which also was awesome. And Kurt basically went to the office and said, can I please do something with Red here? Can we do some sort of program? And the office essentially told him, no, Red can't talk. We're not going to do a lot with this guy, and we're not going to waste you on him. So God, I hope they don't do that same thing with Doug Williams, although they care enough about Doug that they put him in Fortune. So hopefully at some point we might be able to see some sort of feud between those two guys. It would be so great. A best of five with those two, I would quickly fall in love with.
Remember when who was it, Regal and Flair on Saturday night, WCW Saturday night, did the Marquise of Queensberry match, and you could do that sort of stuff too. I was really worried. And in that backwards way, the only thing TNA has really done right for me this year was I was worried about the future of Doug Williams, but for whatever reason, and obviously he's, you know, incredibly talented, but they see that and they've actually kept him in the mix. And yeah, I would love to see a series like that, including one of those Marquise of Queensberry matches that Regal and Flair had.
I was unaware that the Marquise of Queensbury had drawn up rules for pro wrestling, but you learned something.
They had some sort of wacky British round. I can't remember how the British round system works or what exactly it's called, so there'll probably be an angry email coming in from someone in the UK right now.
We'll be back in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We're here for 2 hours every Sunday night at 3 o'clock Pacific, 6 o'clock Eastern on Sports Byline USA. If you ever turn on your radio and the show is not playing for whatever reason, we always stream it live at WrestlingObserver.com, so you can always head up there and listen to it on your computer. Tell your friends, spread the word. We're going to take some phone calls and emails here in this segment. But, Mike, I know you wanted to address this email here. This person says, I was wondering where you see Matt Hughes in the next year. Could he possibly get a title shot with another win? I'm not a Hughes fan at all, so would love to see him get beat up by GSP again. Also, is there a chance Hughes versus Penn 3? This could probably only happen if Penn loses next week, but I think those two could do a big buy rate. They are 1-1. BJ is clearly better, and he was out-wrestled by GSP and Hughes and beat Matt so many years ago, so there's a story to tell here, and they can both trash talk.
You know, with Matt Hughes, if he does go out there and say he is quick to wrap somebody up, it's not going to hurt my feelings too much if Matt Hughes gets another title shot, because I don't think that, you know, GSP can injure him. I don't think it'd be all that, you know, competitive of a matchup. But with that said, I mean, you put that on a card with some other things, I really wouldn't have a problem with that, because, you know, Hughes, unlike Brett Favre, but you know, doesn't have a problem knowing when it's going to be over. But I think when he does decide that it's over, the UFC can utilize him in the same way that they're doing with some members of the Gracie family and with Hermes Franca at the Fan Expo, and they're going to be doing some jiu-jitsu exhibitions. And I think that's a great idea. They've started up UFC gyms. They try to really diversify themselves into a lot of things and into a lot of different countries in a lot of ways. And mostly we talk about media-wise, in that they're going to be in 300 theaters again for this pay-per-view coming up and stuff like that. But I think with the, you know, the advent of the UFC brand and logo and things like that, they can actually open up their own schools and things like that down the line. And I think having guys like Matt Hughes and or Renzo Gracie or anybody to do maybe events the day of or the day before a big show, you know, they do the autograph signings, they have meet and greets, you have the Fan Expo thing where, you know, you could listen to Kale Sonnen and Matt Serra do stand-up comedy, and they have all those sorts of things. Why not add on and keep these guys under contract? Guys like Matt Hughes and Chuck Liddell and Jens Pulver, got people who still have some things to offer, obviously have things to offer fans and people like that, but put them in those situations and have them do things like that, because it keeps them in the mix. It keeps them with a paycheck. It's, I think, great PR, and it's good for the sport if people get a chance to maybe see these things happen, or sending these guys out to media locations when it comes time to, you know, the UFC's coming in a couple weeks. Here's Matt Hughes to demonstrate some stuff, and I don't know if he's the key guy I'd want to see on a morning show, but, you know, Renzo Gracie definitely is, and I think there's definitely a place and a time to do those types of things. I think it's coming.
This person here says, do either of you see the WWE building its tag team division anytime soon? They focus so much on their higher-end talent and lack the IC feuds, but most of all, I truly miss the tag team wrestling in actual teams. Is this something you could see them fixing? I would love for them to grab the Motor City Machine Guns and some ROH talent and have some quality tag team wrestling. It's from Tom in Detroit. I don't know if I'd hold my breath. Vince It's funny because when Vince grew up, his favorite wrestlers were tag team guys. But as a promoter, he is not a big fan of tag teams, particularly in 2010. I don't know if maybe he feels that tag teams reek too much of professional wrestling. And of course, he does not want to be professional wrestling. He wants to be sports entertainment. And I don't know. It's just maybe they see that you know, the talented guys, they don't want to saddle them with the tag team. They want them to go singles. I don't know what the deal is, but if you've watched WWE over the last 10 years or so, with the exception of the unified tag titles for a period of time last year, really have not pushed the tag titles very hard. And even when the tag titles were on, like, you know, like superstars, it's not like they main evented a lot of pay-per-views. So I don't know if I'd hold my breath, but you never know what Vince will wake up one morning and decide to do.
No, I mean, if the most bitter a wrestling fan can say, yeah, it does reek of professional wrestling, that's why he doesn't want to do it. And I guess on WWE side, it's, you know, we'll have enough tag teams, you know, as a means to get to the end, which is try to create another big superstar, because how many tag teams do you see in Hollywood and things like that? I think that's kind of the mentality they have, and they're not the only one. They're Bischoff, obviously, with, you know, the disaster area that was going on with, you know, Benoit, Malenko, and Saturn, and Raven, and Duncan and Wyndham, and there was just a big mess that was going on there where they actually dropped the tag titles for a while. It's just, I don't know, I just can never see it really happening again, which is really too bad, because, I mean, that's where, I mean, realistically, Skip Sheffield and David Otunga should be a tag team right now, and they should be a tag team in Florida. But they should stay a tag team the same way they were on Monday night, because, you know, dudes need to learn, and it's not a bad idea to have, you know, that's what tag teams were for, you know, to help guys along just as much as, you know, having major feuds.
Well, there was an 8-man team in the Expendables.
Well, that's that is true.
Let's go to the phones. You're on Wrestling Observer Live. Who is this, and where are you calling from?
This is Brian from Modesto, California.
Brian, what's happening?
And not much. I have a question. Like, after years of fighting in MMA or boxing, are fighters required to get, like, brain, like, scans or something to see if they have brain damage? Because sometimes it makes me wonder when I hear them talk after years of fighting.
I mean, they're not required by the athletic commissions. I mean, I've never heard of a commission requiring a guy to do a brain scan before a fight. And I don't think that UFC...
Well...
Yes?
New York did. Now, if there's something that comes up, because I'm almost 100% sure this is what happened with Joe Messi, who was a heavyweight contender, and it may have even been Vasily Giroff as well. I believe Messi definitely, though, when he was found to have an abnormality on his brain, so he has been required, I believe, by New York, and I don't think he's been licensed in New York or Nevada because of that reason.
Well, I'm talking MMA guys. I've not heard any commissions.
MMA or boxing, that's
right. Oh, for boxing, Mike would know far more about boxing. He can talk about that in a second. But for MMA guys, I have not heard anybody make any mention of that. I know that was it Thiago Alves that had a something on his brain, and I think Antonio Silva obviously had the issue with the growth hormone. So I mean, there could be incidents where, you know, they're going to check a guy after a knockout and they may find a lesion or something like that on his brain, and then that would have to be taken care of. But as far as like a scan to determine, you know, does this man have a badly damaged brain? You know, a lot of that stuff. I mean, if you look at like the stuff that Chris Nowinski is investigating, the chronic traumatic encephalopathy. I mean, the tau proteins and such on the brain, I don't even think you can determine if they are there unless you look at the brain in an autopsy. So it's, I don't think at this point something that would even show up on a pre-fight screening.
All right, thanks for taking my call.
All right, thanks very much for the call. Mike, anything you want to add to that very quickly?
Well, I will, actually, just because it happened this year. Edwin Valero, who was the really, you know, explosive-fisted Venezuelan fighter, who a lot of people were thinking may end up in an explosive fight with Manny Pacquiao at some point down the line, killed his girlfriend in April. Now, the big thing with him was that he got into a motorcycle accident early in his career where he could not be licensed by anyone else. And actually, believe it or not, because there were still questions about his MRIs and his brain scans, they wouldn't license him in California or Nevada or anywhere else. But Texas did, the same way that Texas also let Antonio Margarito, who was caught putting plaster underneath his gloves before his fight against Shane Mosley, they also let him fight in Texas too.
Email question here. I've been asking on the board, sent you a few emails about this, no luck getting an answer. Has Kurt re-signed a TNA contract? Heard it was up in August. I was wondering if he's staying with TNA for another year or would he re-sign with WWE? I have not heard that he has re-signed with TNA, but I would be really, really surprised if he left. My gut tells me he has signed because I know that the last time his contract was coming up and he had not yet re-signed, they very much downplayed him on TV. And now they are pushing him very, very hard. He's probably going to be champion within the next several months. And I would guess if his contract were about to come up and he had not re-signed, they probably would not be doing that. You can say a lot of things about TNA, but I would be really surprised if they were featuring him as much as they were and he was not committed to a deal.
Well, they have a TV title again, which is nice because, as you remember, when Chris Jericho was on his way out from WCW, the way they thought they could appease him was, well, give him the World TV title.
We're going to head to a break. When we come back, more phone calls, emails, and news. We got a lot of it here, so a lot of stuff to still get into. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 45 minutes or so, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts every Sunday night on the Sports Byline USA Network. 2 hours of wrestling and MMA talk. And Mike, what have you been thinking of this EV2 angle in TNA? Has it struck your fancy?
No. No, I was fine with them getting beat up by Fortune last week. Completely fine with that. After that, I mean, I would have been okay with maybe like a series of matches or something where like Balls and Axel lose the beer money and Dreamer loses the Styles, which that they had that match this week, and I just would be fine with this kind of going away as fast as possible. And this bias is too in that. I'm not the biggest Raven fan in the world. I like Sabu, but, I saw him at the pay-per-view. I'm cool. You can kind of go now. And, the Dudleys, I'm not big fans of seeing out there. So it's not working for me because I've seen it so many times. I just don't want to see it again when there's so many other things. Like, we were talking about earlier with with Angle and with Williams and with Beer Money and the Machine Guns, how they've been doing it. Just this one doesn't do anything for me at all. So that's just me.
This person here says...
Although I'll say this, it does do a little bit more for me than the possibilities of thinking about Jeff Jarrett and Hulk Hogan against Kevin Nash.
Oh, God. Well, we're not going to see that because they all got beaten up, so I guess they'll have to team up against the
Oh, that's true.
Fortune.
Now, they can join forces, too, because it's not about the money.
It's never about the money with Kevin Nash. Let's head to the phones here. You're on Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Brian. This is Brian from New York.
Brian, what's happening?
Hey, Brian, how's it going? First off, congrats on the wedding. I haven't spoken in a while.
Oh, thank you.
And I wanted to say I really love that ending on SmackDown, and I think, if they stay behind this guy, I think a definite star was born. I mean, there was no fluke win there. It was completely clean, and just the way the camera stayed on him at the end, it was sold, I thought, just brilliantly,
It is kind of funny where as much as we're critical of a lot of things that WWE does, including... how they handled Nexus at SummerSlam and how they handled Nexus the next night on Raw. I mean, when WWE wants to make a star, they know how to do it. I mean, it's really not hard. You beat a main eventer clean, and he did that. And you very rarely see not only just a newcomer beat a main eventer in his debut, but to beat a main eventer via submission, and when the newcomer is a heel and the main eventer is a babyface. I mean, it's almost unheard of. So they're behind the guy right now, and we'll see how long they stay behind him.
Do you remember? It reminded me a lot of Carlito's debut. Do you remember that when they did the deal with Cena when he took the U.S. title?
Yeah, that was a big one too. I don't know. Time is going to tell with Alberto Del Rio. I mean, he does have. I mean, he's not a great worker by the American style. He's rubbed some people the wrong way backstage just because of the way that he is. But he does have, I think he's got more size than Carlito, although it's kind of hard to tell because, he debuted against...
Oh, he does.
Okay, well, he debuted against Rey Mysterio, so it's tough to tell what kind of size a guy really has. But, I don't think he's going to be as lazy as Carlito. Carlito kind of set new standards in that in that way. So hopefully he won't follow down that path.
I just think his personality is so strong. Like, how can you hold that down? I mean, it would just be such a mess if they just, you know, because he rubbed them the wrong way like other guys, you just keep him down. In the end, you're just fighting yourself like you always do. I think his personality is just awesome.
I'll say this about his personality, and I'm not trying to bash Dos Cross Jr. I like him a lot and everything, and I really love the way, I mean, from the having his own ring announcer to the Rolls Royce and, you know, the gold tights and everything. I mean, I thought they pulled all of that off great, and I think the promos have been really strong leading in, too. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say, though, that I have the 100% confidence in that Alberto Del Rio, once these things, you know, he starts cutting his interviews, I'm going to be interested see how that goes, because he's not Mr. Charisma. I mean, he's got charisma. He is comfortable in front of the camera, and he has been around. I mean, he's, you know, and also on top of it, a tough guy as well, too, for the most part. I mean, outside of getting KO'd by Crow Cop, but I'm not sure exactly if his personality is going to be super shiny in a couple of weeks once everything kind of, you know, advances here.
Anything else, Brian?
I guess that's it. Take care, guys.
All right, thanks very much for the call. Really appreciate it. I will say that as far as charisma goes, I mean, I actually think that Carlito has a lot more natural charisma than Alberto Del Rio. The problem is, I think Carlito, the story of his life was he was a complainer. Like, if things didn't go his way, he pouted and actually made things significantly worse. Like, if you're not happy with the way things are going, in WWE especially, it's your job to make your situation work. It is not your job to complain and pout about it, because all you're doing is digging yourself into a deeper hole. And he dug himself deeper and deeper and deeper and ultimately ended up, where he ended up, which is back in Puerto Rico. Let's jump back to the phones here. You're on Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from? Going once. Going twice. And gone. Wanted to mention that Skip Sheffield is out of action, perhaps indefinitely. He suffered a broken ankle at the house show in Honolulu. And if you watched Raw on Monday, they wanted to give most of the Nexus guys a win back after SummerSlam, but they half-assed it. And unfortunately, that resulted in only two guys moderately getting over. Only two of them won decisively. There were a lot of count-outs and goofiness. But two guys that got put over big were Wade Barrett and Skip Sheffield. And I think that those were the guys that WWE decided they were going to push to the moon. And now, with Sheffield getting hurt, pretty much the absolute worst timing possible.
Yeah, I think there was too much bitching about Raw on Monday night. Obviously, terrible timing for Skip Sheffield's, you know, career path. But at the same time, I think because of the way he looks, and obviously for his lack in the ring, you know they're going to have plans for him no matter what. I don't think it's going to be all that bad on his career. It's going to be this is, you know, equivalent in a lot of ways. Well, not in a lot of ways, but Dave Bautista as Deacon Dave with Reverend Devon. No one's going to remember that, and I have a feeling, depending on how long he's out for, they're going to bring him back as this, you know, psychopathic monster. It seems to be working now. That's probably going to have how they're going to bring him back, and I don't think that this stint out is going to hurt him all that much.
I want to talk to you about the Raw show here in a moment, but let's take this call. You're on Observer Live. Who is this, and where are you calling from? You're on the air. This person's having some severe problems with his phone. Okay, tell me a little bit about Raw. You said you didn't find it to be as bad as a lot of people said.
No, I don't think so. And I mean, you know, one thing that everybody has to remember is, yes, there is a big E at the end of the WWE. It is entertainment. They were running Los Angeles, second straight night in the Staples Center. I don't think anyone should be overly surprised that John Cena went out there. And, yeah, I thought actually did a really good job in that ridiculous, you know, rundown of Nexus. I mean, realistically, too, I'm not stupid. Nexus, like, 2 months ago was in the, you know, Mae Young crotch chop challenge or whatever the hell it was that they had on NXT. You know, the stars are there. People complained about how guys were treated on that show, but realistically, I don't think it was all that bad. Darren Young, Percy Watson's off NXT now. Does anyone care about Darren Young leaving? They probably shouldn't. Let them go back to Florida, and they can bring them back as these, you know, South Beach boys way later on down the line or something like that. Daniel Bryan's comeback at SummerSlam, I thought, was awesome. I also didn't have a problem at SummerSlam with Cena beating Barrett at the end. Are you going to expect everyone that watches WWE, and they're different than the people that listen to this show and they go to the website, do you expect them to really believe that Barrett's going to go over John Cena, who they look at as the best wrestler in the world? I don't think so, and I don't think Barrett lost anything in this. I don't think Justin Gabriel lost anything on Monday night. He was supposed to have a match with Bret Hart. They call that off. He gets Randy Orton, who Los Angeles treated, you know, at least for one night, almost like he was Stone Cold Steve Austin. They went ballistic for him. And even though it was a cheap victory, even though he got RKO'd, that's more likely going to go on the best of his, you know, hit list as opposed to hurting him at all. When they show Nexus and they show, you know, the pictures and the video that comes up on the screen, the second face shown after Wade Barrett is Justin Gabriel, and I don't think it hurt Gabriel at all. The only guy they really hurt on Monday night to me was, well, there were two people, John Morrison, which, because R-Truth didn't take that fall in that match, it probably, you know, screams again that he's going to be turning dirty at some point down the line. That's what, you know, stuck out as far as hurting a guy. If that doesn't happen, then Morrison got hurt a little bit in this because he keeps losing. The only other guy that got hurt was Heath Slater, who, you know, the Photoshop they popped up there, I don't think it was insulting to his character. It was kind of funny. When you have that quick sight gag and get it pulled away, that's fine. When they don't overuse those things, it's pretty funny. They got a Wendy chant out of it. You know, it's got to be annoying to Slater, but tough. That's the reaction they were looking for. The way he lost, or the way he won the match against Edge, I thought was cheap. And he was the only one the entire night that I thought got buried all that bad. And, you know, again, there's obviously a reason for that. He was supposed to be the second guy, if I recall correctly, who everybody liked so much. I think Gabriel's got that spot. And really, with the experience level of these guys, do people really want these guys to be like superstars, or really think that they were going to overwhelm the WWE pack? I thought the story has been good. I thought they should have waited to the Survivor Series to start the losses. But again, I don't see what people are complaining about so much on Monday night, when there were so many other things to complain about, like the guest host stuff or the continued role of Michael Cole just being too over the top and being extra annoying. I mean, there were just too many other things to complain about besides that.
I do want to read this email very quickly. Do you think Michael Cole could surpass Vicky Guerrero on the heat scale if and when they decide to finally pull the trigger to turn him heel? I mean, right now, yes, because Vicky is an upper mid-card act with Dolph Ziggler, and Cole would be a main eventer. So I think that right off the bat, he would certainly have more heat than she does now. As far as, like, Vicky during her peak, I don't know, because she was very hated. She was very hated.
People also still like Vicky, whereas I think it was almost to the point watching Raw and Nexus, I hate to say it, it was almost that turn the channel heat, or at least put it on mute. That's how it was just too much. It was way too much.
We're going to talk about this more when we come back from the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 20 minutes, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, taking your phone calls and your emails. And for the latest in pro wrestling and MMA, always head to WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates, show reviews, and tons of radio shows. Scroll down the right-hand side of the page, a list of our latest 3 free radio shows. Check them out. If you like what you hear, we do 15 to 20 radio shows every single week. And if you sign up, you not only get all of the new shows, but you get every show we've done in our archives dating back to 2005. There are thousands and thousands of shows, tens of thousands of hours of audio. You will never be able to catch up if you sign up today, because even if you start trying to catch up, we're going to be adding 15 to 20 shows every single week. So good luck catching up. If you love wrestling audio, if you have a commute, if you work out at the gym, if you just like listening to audio in the evenings, who knows, then this is the place to go, WrestlingObserver.com. Let's take a phone call here very quickly. You're on Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, guys. It's David Bix.
David, what's going on?
Not much. Glad to see the phone's finally working.
That's right.
anyway, between the Chris Nowinski stuff in the news last week and the piece you did on In Media Res, I was thinking about the Andrew Martin brain exam results and how he was not a guy who was considered a big bumper. you know, a guy who took a lot of headshots, whatever, and he had, I don't know, I mean, I don't know if they necessarily said as quite as bad brain damage as Chris Benoit, but severe, you know, chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And what I've been wondering about is how much of this do you think is the American and Japanese style of flatback bumping, as opposed to in Mexico where they take the rolling bumps and they're not getting whiplashed all the time?
I don't think it's the flat back bumping, because if it was, I think you would see far, far, far more people. Like, pretty much every wrestler who's ever worked would have a bad case of this. I think that the thing with, like, Test and Benoit and trying to compare all of these things. I mean, obviously, if you look at Benoit, he took a million chair shots. He did a million diving headbutts. He worked with concussions repeatedly. And a guy like Test, you know, he did not take as many chair shots and diving headbutts and that sort of thing. But the case I always look at is like Mike Quackenbush. And I don't know the state of Mike Quackenbush's brain, but I do know that if you asked him, he'd tell you that he suffered like over a dozen concussions. And meanwhile, you'll find other wrestlers. Lance Storm, for example, worked his entire career, and he never suffered a single concussion. And
to the best of his knowledge.
To the best of his knowledge, sure. But the thing with CTE is, we know so little about it right now that it's really... I mean, all we can do in this case is speculate. I mean, the one thing that I've learned from looking at people who have died of steroids and pain pills and that sort of thing is everybody is different. You will have guys that can go decades with heavy steroid use, and they end up seemingly none the worse for wear. You can have guys that take pills for years and years and years, and they will be none the worse for wear. You can find a guy that he takes steroids for, you know, he cycles on for 6 weeks once a year, and he ends up dying young. Everybody's body is different. Everybody's brain is different. And Test may have been one of those guys that he was extremely susceptible to getting CTE. I mean, I presume at some point we'll have a better idea, and I think that there might be something along the lines of people that take steroids and pain pills together end up far more susceptible to heart disease than others. But at the same time, Benoit took steroids and pain pills for years, and they cut him open, and his heart was completely fine. So it's just, you know, everybody's different. And, you know, I think that Tess probably was just one of those guys that his body was not built for bumps, pain pills, and steroids, and he did all three, and he died young.
Okay. Just when you talk about, like, the anomalies and all that, that makes me think of, like, a guy like Jerry Lawler, who...
Yeah, he's a complete freak.
Huge bumps for the last four decades, did the fish drop onto his knees in practically every match, and he's moving better than most non-wrestlers at his age.
Yeah. And he was also one of those guys also that was drug and even alcohol free. So
right, yeah.
It could have been, and he never even worked out of the gym is another astounding thing about it. He does not lift weights. So here's a guy that he didn't smoke, he didn't drink, he didn't do drugs. He took bumps for 40 years and he's fine. So it's just, you know, I think that there are a lot of factors that go into all of this, and plus everybody is different. So, you know,
we got a very interesting lifetime coming up in front of us, too. That, you know, the problem is always going to be, you know, because obviously depression, antidepressant drugs, how do they play on athletes like this? But, I mean, we're going to have to rely on football, I think, being the, you know, the best testers out of everyone on how much, you know, as far as all of these effects kind of adding up together, I think those are going to be the guys we're going to have to look at. And wrestling and boxing, and I'm not sure how much is going on in hockey right now, but mixed martial arts, it's just we're at a very important early stage right now, and the more information that can be gotten from these guys and the more brain donations and open, even if it's anonymous, there's got to be a way to keep it anonymous too for these doctors to find out possibly what's going in your bodies too, because it's going to be a lot of testing and a lot of things that need to be done over these next years and decades, and all the information possible now is going to help that out immensely.
Anything else, David?
That's about it.
All right. Well, thanks very much for the call. Really appreciate it. For those of you that did read the, I did a deal for In Media Res. It's up on the internet right now. I actually wrote about 1,200 words on the Rob Terry chair shot, and after I wrote it, I was alerted that they wanted all the posts to be 400 words or less, so I had to severely cut it down. So for those of you that read the 420-word version, I'll be posting the 1,200-word version up on the front page of WrestlingObserver.com sometime in the next couple of hours, so you can go up there and check that out as well. And let's check out some of the other emails here. This person says, it's been several months since WrestleMania, and which do you feel is better, the first Taker-Shawn match or the more recent one? In my opinion, well, the second one had a better story going into it. I think the first match had a more epic feel to it with Michael's elaborate entrance and the kick out of the first tombstone. Thanks for everything you do. Love the show. It's worth every penny. Mike, what are your thoughts?
I thought the first one was awesome. You know, that wins. Not that there was anything wrong with this one at all. It was still awesome. It was just, I don't know, last year's just was over the top for me. That was realistically my match of the year, whereas, you know, this year I think I still have the ROH pay-per-view match with Black and Strong. I thought was better than the Undertaker and Michaels and, you know, that right there. I mean, I just really thought last year's was awesome.
I'll give my thoughts in a second. Let's take one last phone call here. You're on Observer Live. Who is this and where are you calling from?
Hey, Brian, it's Bill Beecroft from New Jersey.
Bill, what's up?
Not much. You got Mike there, too?
Yep.
I wasn't sure if you guys touched on G1 and his thoughts. And I also had a quick question. I was wondering if he knew the backstory or if you know the backstory behind the fight between Shinya Hashimoto and Noyo Ogawa. Like, I was watching it the other day, and I saw, like, one of those Dutch MMA fighters was with Ogawa. And like, was it planned going in? Was that a shoot from the get-go, or what was the deal with that? And then just Mike's G1 thoughts.
Mike,
you know, I'm going to let Dave probably answer that one. If I recall correctly, the story I heard was Hashimoto was on that big losing streak at the time, and it was basically, you know, him getting beat up. It wasn't a shoot in the aspect of, you know, Ogawa went into business for himself. But, I mean, just remember, Ogawa at the time was 0-1 and all that stuff going on. This was leading into him in Pride and the match with Fedor and all that kind of sort of stuff, too. I mean, he was a big star. And if I recall correctly, Hashimoto, they were really playing it up that he was kind of Mr. Deadstock at that time and just took a beating. It was a planned beating, but if I recall correctly,
yeah,
took a beating. But Dave can, you know, will probably be able to answer that a little bit better on tonight.
But I think actually, it was like Semi-Schilt, like, went to the ring with Ogawa, and if anybody got close to him, if you watch closely, he just shoves them aside. It's like, it's almost like he brought him in as bodyguard to, like, help.
Yeah, I think my understanding is they wanted to get Ogawa over big. And obviously the idea has always been that, and Mike can talk about this, but in Japan, and it's kind of accepted like this in Japan, and it was never really thought this way in the U.S., but I think that most older fans would agree that, I think that most people in Japan knew that this pro wrestling is not on the level, but these men in here performing are real tough badasses that would kill you. And I think the idea to get Ogawa over was they wanted fans to think that he went in there, he went into business for himself, and when the chips were down, he just destroyed Shinya Hashimoto. And
yeah, Hashimoto looked like Lashley after that fight.
Yeah, I seem to recall that Hashimoto knew going in that he was going to take an ass kicking, and it was being done to get Ogawa over. So, like Mike said, it wasn't really a shoot, but this was a way to get Ogawa over by having him go in there and seemingly shoot on and destroy a guy who had a rep as a tough guy.
Well, thanks for that. And if you haven't yet, can you talk a little bit about your thoughts on G1?
Yeah, Mike, go ahead.
Well, I was having a great first couple of days. I actually was like 18-3. I had a perfect third day. And from there, I had a bad day after that. Just the wrong guys won for my predictions. I actually thought they'd go back to the well and have Tanahashi and Nakamura again. I was really surprised when Satoshi Kojima was squaring up in the last couple of days, but then just screamed to me that he was actually going to be the one to win it. Even though he was an outsider, you have the story of him coming home and back to New Japan. For those who don't know the story, he bailed on New Japan along with Great Muta and Kendo Kachin and a whole lot of office staff to go basically save all Japan once Noah struck out on their own and and cleaned out the entire company. Kojima announced himself as a freelancer. He's got some stuff going on in NOAH that was already planned before this, so that obviously plays into the fact that New Japan and NOAH have been working together, and it gives another opponent for Makabe, and Kojima and Makabe are going to have one coming up that should actually be really, really good, so nothing wrong really with that decision whatsoever. A lot of hardcore American-Japanese fans don't like Satoshi Kojima. I've always been a big fan of his, so I'm really happy with this, and he probably will have a pretty good war with Makabe, who's been a pretty damn good champion.
Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate you taking my call, and I know, Mike, you know, you've been saying, call in about Japan, so I called in about Japan. But do me a favor, let's lay low on the hockey talk, you know? I'm getting a little bored with the hockey.
Oh, poor Mike. Poor Mike.
Thanks, almost Sean Avery season, ladies and gentlemen. Everyone get happy. Mike Sorey, where are you?
That's right. I want to talk quickly about Shawn Michaels and Undertaker. I was there live for both matches. I actually have not seen either match on DVD or Blu-ray yet, believe it or not. But I can tell you that...
Look how stuck up you are, but the man on the scene. I haven't had time to watch these things on TV. I was there, for God's sakes, rubbing elbows.
Well, you know, things happen. But I do remember when I was watching the match this year, I thought that the first match obviously was out of this world. I was scared half to death when Undertaker landed on his head. And that was kind of one of the reasons that I didn't feel the match was 5 stars, because a dude almost got killed and it was obviously a botch and it took me out of the match. But when I was watching like the rematch, the whole time I was thinking, my God, this is awesome. But I know move for move everything that's going to happen here. You know what I mean? Like in the first match, the kicking out of the tombstone and that sort of thing was like shocking. But in the second match, it was like, you know, I knew he was kicking out of the first tombstone. I knew Undertaker was kicking out of the first super kick. It was almost like I was watching the first match on tape the second time. So I do feel the first one was better, but they were both fantastic matches. I gave them both 4 3/4. People will argue that till the day I die that it should have been 5, but everyone is entitled to their own opinion. We actually have to jump to a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. One last email here, also from David Bix, that called in a little while ago. He says, in the past, you've talked about how some wrestlers, especially certain females in WWE like Ashley Massaro and Candice Michelle, didn't seem like they were built to take bumps, and it led to injuries, that's for sure. Maybe someone like Martin was along those lines, had a tendency to whiplash more than most wrestlers. He had great trainers in Bret Hart and Leo Burke, so it's not like his training was deficient. Well, I mean, the one thing also with training is that you can be trained by the best guys in the world, and you can still suck. And you can also be trained by, or not trained at all, trained by bad guys or guys that don't know what they're doing, and you can end up being a very, very, very good worker. To me, learning to work is all about the guys that you work with. The training is important in the sense that you learn how to take bumps and that sort of thing, but even somebody who sucks should be able to teach you how to take a flat back bump. The real learning is done in the ring with other guys. And to me, if there was a problem with Test, it was just that his body was not made for all of the stuff that he made his body do. And there are bodies, and there are a lot of bodies like that, actually. And he might have been one of them. So that's I guess that's my follow-up to that. Any last thoughts on that, Mike?
No, not really, although I did remember that the Steven Regal Ric Flair matches were under the Duchess of Queensbury rule.
Ah, well, that clears that. The Duchess of Queensbury. Everybody, okay. We're going to wrap it up here for today. Don't forget, next weekend is UFC in Boston. I presume we're going to have a show next weekend, but I might not be involved. We'll soon find out. I've got a long flight there and a long flight back, and I'm not sure when I'm going to be in or if I'll be in time to do the show. Mike will probably be able to do a live show if all else fails, but we'll get all that hammered out. But check it out anyway in its normal time slot next week, 3 o'clock p.m. Pacific, 6 o'clock p.m. Eastern, Wrestling Observer Live as always. And if not, we'll be back soon afterwards. But I want to thank everybody for listening today. Thanks, Mike, as always. Thanks, everybody involved with getting this show put together. We do very much appreciate it. Check out WrestlingObserver.com for more radio. We got a big show, a huge show coming up tonight. Go to WrestlingObserver.com, and you won't be disappointed. We'll talk to you very soon. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network.